able to do so, he becomes very unhappy. Sometimes he is cheated in business transactions, one after another. In this way, by cheating, living entities create enmity among themselves. Very nice purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is an example of the struggle for existence, the attempt to counteract the onslaught of material nature. This creates enmity in society, and consequently society is filled with envious people. One person is envious of another. And this is the way of the material world. The Krishna consciousness movement aims at creating an atmosphere of non-envy. Of course, it is not possible for everyone to become Krishna conscious, but the Krishna consciousness movement can create an exemplary society wherein there is no envy. So we can do it, because Prabhupada said we can do it. And the next verse is similar. It's double kvachit. Kvachit, kvachit. Kshina dananas to tasmin. On the forest path of material existence, sometimes a person is without wealth and due to this does not have a proper home, bed, or sitting place, nor proper family enjoyment. He therefore goes to beg money from others. But when his desires are not fulfilled by begging, he wants to borrow or steal the property of others. Thus, he is insulted in society. Purport. The principles of beg, borrow, or steal are very appropriate in this material world. When one is in want, he begs, borrows, or steals. If begging is unsuccessful, he borrows. If he cannot pay, he steals. And when he is caught, he is insulted. This is the law of material existence. No one can live here very honestly. Therefore, by trickery, cheating, begging, borrowing, or stealing, one tries to satisfy his senses. Thus, no one in this material world is living peacefully. The metaphor that's being used is a forest. It's very similar to the fourth canto discussion about the forest of material enjoyment. Or reminiscent of the verse, or expanding on the notion expressed in Bhagavad Gita that the living entity in the material world, in material consciousness, wants happiness. But instead they get distress. The very nature of wanting happiness through the senses or through something outside of oneself, through the senses contacting sense objects, and therein lies happiness, the very contemplation or expectation invites misery. Because it's not so. The nature of looking for happiness apart from Krishna is maya, and the nature of maya is the opposite of what one expects. So one expects happiness and one gets distress. So I guess the simple solution is just expect distress and you'll get distress. You won't be disappointed. The message is not just a name-calling game of this is bad and that's bad, and something I remember growing up. I've said this before, but any two-bit teenager can tell you all the things that are wrong in the world. Just ask them. But it's a very unique person that knows the solution to the problem. Very unique. I didn't find any as a teenager. No one that good at complaining, but not good at finding solutions. So this is not just complaining, like, this is the way it is, man. I saw a devotee last night, or yesterday afternoon after the Vyasa Puja ceremony. I hadn't seen him in a long time. How's it going? Working hard. Shrugged his shoulders and said, that's life. And that's life. Now, we're very fortunate. Prabhupada would speak about it, you know, advertise it. You people work so hard. Come and join us. No, I have to work hard. And then the criticism of saying, you people are parasites. They would like us to work hard like them. They would like us to be mudhas like them. And when we're not mudhas like them, they criticize or they're envious. Here's a little anecdotal story. I was taking part in a GBC meeting one year in Mayapur, and after that I went to Calcutta to take an overnight train somewhere to go visit some devotees. And one of the things I like about trains in India, especially the overnight trains, is you don't waste any time. But one of the things I learned about traveling in overnight trains is practically as soon as you reach the place, the car, sit in the train, before even the train like pulls out of the station, just take rest. Because the whole car is busy with blah blah and whatever. But fortunately, earplugs plus being tired, I can take rest. Jitendra was commenting, you didn't hear our noise, and the evening before Janmashtami, we were up till 2 o'clock banging away, and I was really tired. I didn't hear a thing. So take rest, and then while everybody's in the morning, wake up, everyone's zonked out. And that's a nice time to chant when you're not disturbing anybody. Really nice. And pretty much by the time people are up, my rounds are finished. And then I can read while they're, doing their thing. So the arrangement was, it was in one of those first-class compartments where it's a little less congested. It's not like 20 people in a space that's supposed to be for 4. You know how it is in India. And so I got up and chanted. They took a bath. That's another thing. You can, bring with you something, a container, a lota or something. You can take a bath right there. And by the time all the water has dried, before everybody else comes in, you've taken your bath. That's really good. Anyway. So the gentleman that was, he was on the lower, he got up, went in, the usual, brushed his teeth, and then asked for tea and pulled out his newspaper. So that was like, 1, 2, 3. Brush his teeth, ask for tea, get a newspaper. So as he pulled out his newspaper, I'm sitting there reading, he deliberately looked at me like this and said, so? And I figured, okay, he's going to let me have it for something. So, do you also need money? Or not also, do you need money? Something like that. So I saw where the train was going with his line of thinking. I said, every living entity is maintained by the Supreme Living Entity. Quoted the verse. Eko bhunam yo vidyati kaman. Said, so where do you get your money? And I said, from the same place you do. My dear demoniac father. But the difference is, you're thinking, I said it, you're thinking, what is maintaining you is coming from your own labor, when in fact it's coming from the same place where mine is coming from. But if you think that I'm lazy, you should watch me. I'm a very busy person, as you are a very busy person. But our consciousness is different. But we're being maintained by the same source. Snotty took his paper, went, and flipped his newspaper up so he didn't have to see me anymore. And the devotee, it was Mithu, he felt really bad. And I felt like this is just, Krishna's giving me an opportunity, like, you know, the anatomy of a mudha, an envious mudha that wants others to be mudhas. And if you're not a mudha, you're bad. And there's different varieties of such personalities, certainly. Very colorful array. But this is a world of envy. And it's a world, well, it's three things that are mentioned here. Struggle for existence, and because of that, trying to counteract the disturbances. The word, this prati kriyam. Prati means like pratikshana svadhana lalupasya. It's intervals of moments. And life is made up of intervals of moments. Kriyam, where we're at every moment trying to counteract. Kriya means activity. Every moment trying to counteract what's coming at us, you know, in material consciousness, and struggling very hard with the unending assault of the material energy. And therefore the word kvachit. Sometimes it's this one, sometimes it's that one. The next verse is kvachit, kvachit. Sometimes it's one after the next. It's like 10 things at once. And we're kept very busy counteracting, where we want to be like this is a nice temperature. There's a nice breeze coming, the windows are open. It's a very opulent temple in many senses, but one is the air and the light. It can come into the temple room. Some temple rooms don't have such nice situation. Fans in the ceiling. So, I remember during the installation of Krishna Balaram. My memory, see what that morning or the next morning in Vrindavan, so like this momentous, awesomely powerful experience of installing Krishna Balaram and Prabhupada performing the arati, and then he spoke. It's either that morning or the next morning, he pointed to the fan and said, why do we need this fan? Because we're uncomfortable. So we're busy trying to counteract the miseries of material existence. Same message. And that momentous occasion, you know, how much Prabhupada wanted us to understand. Our spirits are way up here, and he's helping us to understand, like, then the basic things is we don't belong in this material world. We're very busy endlessly counteracting the miseries of material existence, which is in the first line. Shita, atapa, vata, Varsha. So he's like embellished it a little bit. Freezing cold, scorching heat, strong wind, and excessive rainfall. So we need some heat, but we don't need excessive heat. But sometimes it's excessive, sometimes kvachit, sometimes, etc. So this is describing one of the three types of kleshas. Adi bhautika klesha, adi daivika klesha, miseries caused by circumstances that are beyond our control, but life has filled the circumstances beyond our control. We want it to be such and such. So whether it's like you're just the elements, or even when we wish to progress on the path of devotional service, we're trying to be nice devotees, and we have, you know, our set of expectations from Krishna. It's going to be like this. And quite often, or at least kvachit, sometimes it's not like this, it's like that. And that is a disturbance of some kind or another, or a whole series of them. The point being, all of these are examples of a life devoid of Krishna consciousness. When there's a life in Krishna consciousness, one, minimally, according to Krishna's instructions, one tolerates those things, the dualities, matra sparshas tu kaunteya sita, sitoshna sukha dukha da, heat and cold, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, and the endless array of dualities. Tolerate. That's Krishna's instruction, so tolerate. If you tolerate, then you have to place your consciousness somewhere else instead of, oh, I don't like this discomfort. So you place your consciousness by choice, you direct your consciousness to the Supreme, or to that which is eternal, to the soul's eternal life. That's when one is Krishna conscious. When one is not Krishna conscious, it's this struggle. Daivihi eshu gunamai, mamamaya doratiya. It's an endless struggle. Endless struggle. Even when things, you know, like get it to the position where it's okay, now things are in order. If there is such a thing. It doesn't stay. It's an endless struggle. Endless struggle. And sometimes we get tired of struggling and think, you know, some mode of ignorance thoughts that says, I'm tired struggling. I give up. But then the positive is taking shelter of Krishna. And so that's the opportunity of the struggle. The lesson is, it's not a place of happiness. It's not designed that way. It's not supposed to be. It's a place of difficulty. Take shelter of Krishna. So the onslaughts of material nature is one thing. Then Prabhupada very quickly goes, the onslaught of material nature attempts to counteract material nature, the onslaughts of material nature. The next sentence, this creates enmity in society. Now how does onslaughts of nature create enmity within society? There's lots of... You going to volunteer one?
Stories of vandalism breaks out. People are desperate. You know, they'll hurt one another to get things. You know, we've seen it in New Orleans and many other places.
That's a good example. So many examples. Somebody has a solution that didn't come my way yet. They got a fan, and I don't have a fan. They've got an air conditioner. I don't have an air conditioner. they get a nice warm jacket in the cold, and I don't have a nice warm jacket in the cold. And they have a nice house, and I don't have a nice house. You know, or so many unlimited varieties of the struggle creates enmity. You know, some people then do it like, okay, a group of people will work together. But then you have a group of people working together for a common solution, and then you have other people seeing, oh, there's envy. They've got it, and I haven't been included. It's just endless. So then right away, Prabhupada goes from that. This creates enmity in society, and consequently society is filled with envious people. One person is envious of another, and this is the way of the material world. We're quite acquainted with it. So Prabhupada is proposing very succinctly in the purport, there's an alternative. And that's the situation where people are non-envious. And that's what Krishna consciousness is. So Krishna consciousness, in one sense, we can think of it as an institution, but it's consciousness. And Krishna consciousness creates non-enviousness. Not necessarily the institution creates non-enviousness. If the institution is made up of individuals who are non-envious, then we have a non-envious institution. But non-enviousness is consciousness. And non-envious means how we regard Krishna and how we regard ourselves as part of Krishna. And then if we get that in order, we can be non-envious. I'll leave out the name. But during Prabhupada's final days in Vrindavan, devotees would come from different places around the world, and there was an opportunity to intimately just be in Prabhupada's presence in that physically emaciated condition that he was in, and just have kirtan. So at least I wasn't there, but I was told one devotee, because Prabhupada was lying in his bed, he wasn't even with his eyes open, just hearing the kirtan, and he liked the kirtan in a special way. He said, he asked the person's name, the name was given, and Prabhupada said, this devotee is non-envious. Just by the sound of his voice. So I guess, you know, if you're Krishna conscious, you can tell the difference between an envious person's voice and a non-envious person's voice. Prabhupada remarked like that. So it's an individual, the opportunity is given to each of us through Krishna consciousness to see things in their proper way. This is described as the statement of the quality of goodness. One can see things in the... This is knowledge. Shastra chakshus or jnana chakshus. One can see things in the proper way. That means seeing as Krishna sees things. That's seeing things in the proper way. And when you see things as Krishna sees things, you're not envious, because Krishna's not envious and Krishna's not seeing things in that manner any more than Krishna is envious. There's this important subject matter in the Bhagavatam, this little sidebar, but it's related to enviousness, where in the seventh canto, the first chapter, the whole chapter is focused on this topic. Is Krishna partial? Does he feel enmity towards some and favoritism towards others? That's a question Maharaj Parikshit asks Sukadeva Goswami. But it's kind of a rhetorical question, because
He states, I know that he's not, but it seems from the last chapter of Canto 6, it seems that he is, because you said when Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu took their birth, the Lord, who is impartial, took the side of the demigods. And then you described a whole bunch of other things. So, is he impartial or is he partial? He's got to be partial. He's got to be impartial. And he, at a reason, aside from knowing it's true, this is not, Bhakta Parikshit. This is, this is a pure devotee saying this. He said, what would he have to gain? What would be his motive? Meaning, as Prabhupada explains it, and Shukadeva Goswami further explains it, but the living entity is dependent. And when you're dependent, you have needs. And when you have needs, you look for some way to fulfill your needs. But Krishna is not dependent. He's independent. So he has no needs. But those who have needs, that's us, we're dependent on Krishna. We may, if we're not Krishna conscious, have some need and want something that somebody else had and feel some envy toward the person who has what we think we need. Whether we need it or not, we think we need it. And so we're envious. So it's the nature of the world in which we live. My thought is going now to Bhakti Tirtha Swami, where I remember during the memorial ceremony for him in Gita Nagari, someone was describing, I think it was what's her name? The Mataji that lives in Cleveland. Krishna Nandini was describing in her inimitable way why Bhakti Tirtha Swami used to boast, I'm a mama's boy. And people didn't understand it. So she once asked him, why do you say I'm a mama's boy? He said, when I was very young, we were very poor, lived in a ghetto, and I had two shirts in my closet, and one friend came home with me one day, and my mother told me, give him one of your shirts, because he's very poor. And he said, that's what I mean by I'm a mama's boy. She was so magnanimous. So it's that whatever it was that Krishna had given, it's meant for everyone. Not like envy and jealousy. A little language lesson. This is a Rabindra Sarup Prabhu language lesson. You often hear the word envy and jealousy almost used interchangeably. Envious and jealous. But Rabindra, being the scholar that he is, explained from a linguistic point of view, envy is how you regard someone else or something that someone else has that you wish to have. And jealousy means something that you have and you don't want others to have. As in, one jealously guards their assets. It's a detail. Prabhupada would often use them interchangeably, but technically. When one doesn't have shelter, then you want something you don't have and you try to protect that which you do have. But Krishna says he does that. isn't it? In Bhagavad Gita, yoga kshema vaham yaham. Ananyas chintayanto maham yejana paryupasate tesham nityabhiyoktanam yoga kshema vaham yaham. Krishna supplies what one needs and preserves what one has. So one who is not envious of others and not jealously guarding what they have, whatever they have, it's available to others. Of course, properly utilized, meaning, you know, charity in the mode of goodness is the conduct of a Vaishnava, or one who's living according to the codes of scripture. But when there's the apparent, I'm a dependent individual and I have needs, then I look to, you know, where those needs might be. And if somebody has that resource, then I'm envious of them. And I'm envious of, I covet the resource itself. How do you change that consciousness? I mean, the problem is clear. Again, citing the problem, that's easy. What's the solution? The solution is Krishna consciousness. I'm preparing a presentation for colleges for this semester, and I'm having fun. And the topic is going beyond the conformity game. Everybody, young people, especially idealistic young people, wish to express their individuality. They want to be themselves. But is that be yourself authentic? Is it really who you are? Or are we scripted by so many expectations of others? And anyway, so going through all of that. At one point, so after detailing the problems of how there's so much pressure, to form, without always just repeating that term, just pressures that are upon us to be the expectations of others, to fulfill others' expectations. And then there's a barrier when you want to, just be who you are. Or some people try to be who they are just out of defiance without really knowing who they are, because it's cool, without really knowing who they are, not having a clue. And just, another conformity game. Get a tattoo, or put some metal in your face, and, be an individual. Make your statement. This is me. So there's so much pressure to be something or someone. What is the real self? How can we possibly do that in an atmosphere that's has so much conditioning upon us? And then this little statement, the Albert Einstein statement, is: problems that are created can't be solved by working within the same dimension. You have to go to another dimension to solve the problem. You just create another problem that's of the same dimension of the problem. So, the nice language, pierce the veil. There are some who wish to be authentic individuals, but how do you do that in a materialistic atmosphere? Same question. There's these forces acting upon us, and the struggle, and then the enviousness that comes along with just being in the material world. What's the solution? Help! So there's the points to Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's giving that knowledge. I've been working with this is a little just sharing. I've been working, because it's everyone's half asleep anyways. It's, you know, after Janmashtami and Vyasa Puja, so I'm storytelling to keep people awake. Hare Krishna. I found this, that like pierce the veil. I was looking for a pierce the veil image, and I couldn't find anything because there's a band in Canada called Pierce the Veil, and all it was is garbage about, you know, their stuff. I found a nice image that I like. It's an egg that's got some light shining from over here, but then, you know, there's a crack in the egg, and there's light going out, and it's in a dark atmosphere. So it's like, you know, get out of the shell of conformity and get into the freedom of being yourself kind of idea. And then, so I've been working with Krishna Archana because she's good at graphics and photography. It's an identical image with a shell closed or maybe still cracked open, and then there's a spark in the darkness. The soul has left the conformity game and then exploring beyond the dimension of conformity, and it's exciting. So in the bodily conception, you can't, you're forced by the modes, our language is you're forced by the modes of nature and karma and so many conditioning influences. They're just there. Knowledge is needed beyond that limited sphere. And then what? You know, describe the then what? There's Krishna, or there's the spiritual entire picture of things that we're part of, and how do you relate to that properly? So, as long as one is envious, as long as one stays in that paradigm of enviousness, we're stuck. Try to do it in a different way, and that's all it is. It's just the same thing rehashed. It's the same limitation. It's not a solution. There isn't a solution. It's just a struggle. But there is a solution. We know from Bhagavad Gita, Mama Ibeye Prapanjante, Mayami Tam Tarantite. One can go beyond by taking shelter of one who's beyond, the Supreme, Krishna. Because the material energy is working under his direction anyways. So the opportunity, in fact, the mandate for us is to become non-envious. And, you know, here's the incubation chamber. Here's like the womb where we can try to grow a non-envious spirit in our own heart, in our interactions with others, and assist one another. The very nature of, we hear this about the spiritual world. The spiritual world, there is what Prabhupada called transcendental competition, which is different than the envious kind. Now, here's the envious kind. Here's someone up here. Let me pull them down. Here's someone equal to me. Let me compete with them. Here's somebody less than me. Let me step on their head. That's the material competition. And the transcendental competition is somebody is good at pleasing Krishna. Let's push them forward. And even there's this nice example of both Radharani and Lalita Devi. I'll describe the Leela. Radha is swinging on a swing with Krishna. And the gopis are very happy to see Radha and Krishna enjoying together. But Radha also enjoys that others sit with her, and sometimes so she seats others on the swing. Or she'll get off the swing and place another gopi on the swing. Because Krishna enjoys the variety of happiness of enjoying with others. Or Lalita Devi, one of the things that she likes to do is bring forward one of the new gopis, holds her hand and brings her before Krishna and says, this particular gopi has such a happy mood of pleasing you. She's very expert in serving you in this way, that way. And Krishna smiles. This is non-enviousness of the spiritual world. Very, very different than the enviousness of this material world. So how do we get there? We need to associate with persons who are qualitatively free from envy or eager to, in any circumstance, in any condition, serve Krishna despite the dualities of the material world. You're doing better staying awake. It's good. I have another story to tell, but maybe I'll. Well, it's a quick one. This is now contemporary envy. There's a some of you know the one of the I believe it's a senator from Hawaii, a woman, Tulsi something or other. Took her oath as a senator, swearing in on Bhagavad Gita. And then, her explanation is, this started my spiritual journey. So she has great affinity for Bhagavad Gita. It turns out she was born in a family that was part of a splinter group of the Hare Krishna movement. I forget his name. Who, was a contemporary during Prabhupada's time in Hawaii. Jitendra, help me. Siddhasarup, thanks. You have a good memory. It's a sign of intelligence, by the way, you have a good memory. But you remember some things that aren't so helpful also. Okay, so, she was born of mother and father that were followers of Siddhasarup. At least that's my understanding of how it goes. And so she grew up in Krishna consciousness. A little different version, but Krishna consciousness. Basically following Prabhupada's teachings, but kind of over there doing his thing. And she became a senator. So there's this young man who was born in ISKCON. Aniruddha Shirbo. You're going to hear about it, so I'm just mentioning it. And he wanted to help her in her campaign for a senator. I don't know what happened, but something happened, and the person is apparently crazy, because in the past 3 weeks, in a stretch, he sent something like 35 messages to her, threatening her, and, lewd and disgusting. And then recently just sent a message to the FBI. Two sentences. Dear FBI, if I take a vow that I will find Tulsi wherever she is, and when I find her, I'm going to separate her head from the rest of her body. This is in the news. He's crazy. But, envious to an extreme. I don't know what the issue is, but whatever the issue is, envy is really thick in there, because she's somewhere and he's not. And he wants, something, and she didn't give him that something, whatever that is. So he's going to kill her in a violent way, informing the FBI. Oh, the FBI, so everybody's awake now. The FBI found him, and he's talking like a madman about stuff, whatever he wants. Now he's got a platform. The media is paying attention to him. And he's going to bring a federal charge against her for perjury, because she lied. That's a contemporary kind of but it's going to be in the news. We'll hear about it. So I just mentioned it. Fits in. Struggling very hard, and those who have what we don't have, we're envious of. And Prabhupada says, Of course, it is not possible for everyone to become Krishna conscious. Even if they're born in a family, they're not guaranteed to become Krishna conscious. There's an opportunity, and each of us, not born or not born, some are born in a devotee family, some are not, the opportunity is available to us nonetheless to create an exemplary society. I mean, it starts with each of us, and to assist one another collectively. So that's like our little community here, temple residents, and then beyond the community outside, and you'll keep, the international society for Krishna consciousness individually, and assist one another on that path. Foremost beginning point is our hearing and chanting activities together. And then, like we just had this really nice festival, the nice opportunity to serve Krishna with our heart and soul. And there's still more stuff to put stuff away. And I saw lots of opportunities for service walking around the building. I'm sure some of that's going to go on today. And in let it be done in the mood of we're being given an opportunity to serve and make our hearts free from the hard struggle for material existence or the enmity between persons, rather than thinking, how come I have to do so much and they're doing so little? That happens because not everyone's wanting to be Krishna conscious. But let everyone, especially those that are residing in the temple, especially, take full opportunity of what's being afforded to us and create, Krishna conscious activities and in an atmosphere of non-enviousness. And related, again, is the struggle of, so people need money, and they may, in a poor condition, they may beg for money, and then, that's often, we're not begging for money when we go in Sankirtan, but people say like that, like this man sitting in the train, his message was, you're a parasite. I'm working hard and you're living off of my energy. Why don't you work hard like me? But he didn't say you're a parasite. He said, so, do you need money? So we may go and distribute literature and so forth, and people may think of us in this way. And as being said, insult. I would probably be wealthy if for every person that said, get a job in the course of my distributing books in Sankirtan, they gave a penny. I'd be wealthy. So when we engage in giving Krishna consciousness to others, Prabhupada writes it in his books. On the one hand, we should act in such a way that we're beyond criticism, knowing we'll be criticized, knowing we will be insulted. So that's okay. And then he would say, we're not come as beggars, we're come as givers. People don't see it that way. People see it as the other way. And, they don't like it. Some people don't like it. So in ordinary life, people may beg if they can't, can you help me? And if that doesn't happen, can I borrow some money? And then they can't pay back the borrowed money. And then they're in big trouble. I know somebody that's in that situation. And, some people have distanced themselves from that person because they don't like the fact that he borrowed some money, didn't pay that money back. And then, I'll pay the money back, I'll steal. I'll pay the money back if I can get away with it. But it's problematic. It's just, the short summary is, being in the material world, it's an endless series of problems. So it's designed that way. We don't belong here. We should go beyond the limit. Live an honest life. This is, Prabhupada's saying it's difficult, but that's the instruction. And this is particularly householders related, but one should live an honest life, honest occupation. Very difficult in the age of Kali because so much is going on. But live an honest life, honest occupation, live by honest means, and whatever that provides, live with that. And with the reserve energy, instead of the counteracting splurge of energy, direct that energy towards Krishna consciousness, to cultivating Krishna consciousness. And that's our life. And when Krishna sees that, yogakshema vaham yaham, he'll see that whatever it is, personally he'll see, whatever it is that we require, we'll have. If it's a necessity, in fact, we'll have it. Last thing, this is just some appreciation. We got a report from, we had a nice attendance here. I asked Radharaman how many people came, you know, cars, because he was in charge of the car parking. And do you have any idea of how many people we had? Janmashtami Day? Approximately? No. Huh? More than 2,000. So you saw how crowded it was. Maybe from my window I was looking out to see how many cars. It was like there was so many cars. There were 15 valet persons helping the cars to go to park. Jitendriya said there were... at one time, or in the course of the evening. Okay. And he said he added some more. Okay, Radharaman said he called for some more. So, 2 to 3,000. 2 to 3,000. In Seattle, they had 10,000. 10,000. So, like, take what we had times 4 or 5 in one evening. And it's pretty awesome. Because, you know, the building is smaller than this building. The temple room is about the same size. But the building is smaller than this building. And the parking is, you know, they can't park everybody. I'm sure they had a valet system similarly, because there's a church down the street and 10,000 people. And when Haivilas went there, he was previously in Berkeley Temple. Similarly, because there's a church down the street and request. Help us in Seattle, we're falling off a cliff, basically. I went there 2 years after it was falling off a cliff. And there were other problems without going into other problems. It was a Riptic takeover situation. That was the problem, without the details. And he went in, you know, bold Hari Vilas, and took care of the Riptic problem, and then gradually took it out of the... So it's fantastic what he has done. And there are people that are envious of him, saying bad things, and, you know, he's far from being a perfect person, but what he's done is fantastic. And his team of devotees obviously can't do something like that themselves. So we have lots of opportunity here. We have a big city, Chicago. Nice temple, nicely maintained, compliments of Jitendri and his team and all the people that want to help. And let us see if we can accomplish what Prabhupada is writing here. I'll read it again. The Krishna consciousness movement aims at creating an atmosphere of non-envy. Of course, it is not possible for everyone to become Krishna conscious, but the Krishna consciousness movement can create an exemplary society wherein there is no envy. So that's a nice project to work on. And trying to involve other people in the non-envious project. Any comments or questions? Yes?
relationship between conformity and me. Oftentimes within an institution, one feels pressure to conform to a certain institutional status quo, because if one is not able to do so, then those who are less mature will criticize and so forth. So that makes you feel that I need to conform in order to fit in, or else I'm ostracized.
Or else I'm?
Ostracized. Either I'm told to leave or just like the feel is like that. And so the balance between existing, it's still kind of like the unity and diversity type of topic, but the balance between existing as an individual within an institution without feeling the pressure to conform to some type of status quo, which may not be in line with your individuality.
Sure. Well, that's a big topic. A couple comments. One is, you're pretty good at being a nonconformist. That's my impression in many ways. And that's one comment. Another is something that we've discussed on this point, and that is setting an example. And so then, you know, that's where there's some balance. So like Krishna is saying to Arjuna, even when you become a liberated soul, you'll still perform your prescribed duties. And it's out of compassion to set example, because others will imitate. So set example. And balance is a good word in this case, because there's external and there's internal, and so a big part of the nonconformity can be internal rather than external. And then another thought is, our founder Acharya and the example of his life, both, you know, in relation to the institution from which he came and creating the institution which he created, and how he went about that, and his internal contemplations, at least those are expressed in hard copy form of letters that he wrote to persons wishing, and at the same time recognizing that internally he was on the highest platform, the number of situations where just in the course of speaking or in the course of singing, Prabhupada went into a state of trance. I mean, he was on the highest platform, and yet he was, what was driving him? It was compassion and the instruction of his spiritual master, which was an instruction of compassion. So that was the moderating, that's my understanding. It's a short answer for a big question. That's the moderating factor for creating the proper balance. It's not about me as much as it's about this relationship of receiving and then giving that which I have received, and to do that in a befitting manner. The intelligence how to make the balance comes from that connection. And if one doesn't have that, or as strong as that connection is, the balance becomes easier. The weaker that connection is, the more it's a struggle to find the balance, and it's more about me and resisting conformity rather than, you know, the mood of service. Opportunity, challenges and difficult circumstances are the privilege of advanced devotees who then can exercise the opportunity of the challenge of creating the proper balance of being oneself and so on, versus conforming to institutional expectations. It's a great opportunity. It's a privilege. And take it that way rather than a hardship. By taking it that way rather than a hardship, the intelligence to properly manifest things in a balanced way becomes more clear. And otherwise, it's a struggle. That's a short answer to a big question. Jitendriya, you got something?
When you were relating to that fellow that was on the train that seemed to be a little, under the influence.
Condescending.
Yeah. We had this fella here when Sunil was here. They were putting in a new floor in the kitchen. And,
okay.
There's these two Irish guys, you know. And this is around Prashadam time. And I said, are you guys hungry? And they said, yeah. And I said, well, we have a whole smorgasbord out here, you know. You guys are welcome to have it. And the boss says, no. And he asked me where the McDonald's was, and I said, I can't really tell you that. And then I said, well, why not? And he says, well, I see what it does to you people. So what are you going to do? You know?
Hare Krishna.
Try to help somebody, and then there was another incident. I don't know if you remember when in the Evanston Temple, the mother and the son were living in the temple, and then they had this whole picketing thing in front of the temple. It was on TV. Where is Joey? Do you remember that?
No, I wasn't there for that one.
And then it kind of filtered over here, like a few years later. And I met the grandfather, and he came to the temple. And you don't remember any of that?
Nothing. Zero.
Well, it's the mother and the son.
No, I don't need the whole detail.
But anyways, the father, the grandfather came, and he says, well, you know, you guys seem so intelligent and stuff, and you're doing so much good work, but I just want my son, my grandson back. And I said, well, if we're educating him and bringing him about. So I just want to take him to a baseball game and get him a hot dog. So, I mean, this is where, people are at. But
sure.
What can you do?
You don't have to reach very far to find that. Anyone else?
Thank you for your class. You were explaining that this presentation you were making about for the colleges, this idea that the spark has now escaped from the shell, which is representing the body, and the spark is the
soul. I'll show you the image when it's done. She was working at Photoshop yesterday doing it.
It looks cool. I sometimes have a similar experience when I'm on group distribution, like when I'm speaking to someone and I'm describing to them the various problems we have in this world, and how this book presents the solutions by explaining that we're not the body. And they like that, and they sometimes take books. Internally, I feel myself having some sort of a doubt, because usually in the material world, we're used to very quick solutions. Like, you have a problem, and the solution might take a few days or a few weeks, but you arrive at the answer. Whereas becoming free of the bodily concept of life is a lifelong process. And sometimes it's hard for myself to understand that, what to speak of explaining to others who don't think of solutions as taking so long. I don't know if my question is making sense.
I can only repeat the same thing that I said in different language, but the adjustment of the solution isn't a solution. It may address momentarily, a problem or a conflict, and it gets resolved momentarily. Wait a while, and then there's another shift, and you're still in the same atmosphere, the material atmosphere. It's problematic. So it's not just a matter of making the right adjustments. Now, does that mean that we don't make any adjustments? We don't consider, I got a toothache. Should I go to the dentist? No, just chant Hare Krishna and go to the spiritual world. We go to the dentist. But there's the purpose behind the intermediate solutions to things has a higher purpose, and the consciousness of something higher. It may help us to get closer to Krishna, and therefore, in that consciousness, we apply that. So there's... You follow? So the intermediate or worldly solutions to problems doesn't mean we trash them. We're not advocating, you know, that kind of approach. Just become a madman. Just become an avaduta. Just become an avaduta. Don't do anything else but just neglect everything. It's not our... It's the things that we do it for Krishna. While thinking of Krishna. Yeah.
So, just a clarification. So what we're really presenting is a step-by-step approach of coming closer and closer to Krishna and thus becoming free of the bodily concept. So,
the application of the process results in gradual elevation, and the steps that we may take may also, to be sustainable steps, are gradual steps. But from the very beginning, from the outset, it's... So the purpose of this is, and doing this for that reason helps me get there. Whatever it is. Whatever it is. What I understood you to, the first part of the question is, you have a doubt when people, when expressing to people who think, hey, that's a nice idea, the doubt, what about practical things? We do practical things. Don't we do practical things?
That wasn't so much my concern.
Okay, it wasn't your concern. Then I misunderstood your question.
It was more about how there's the solution that we're presenting is yes, the only solution, but it takes time to arrive at that. And so one has to work in that time period.
Sure.
Between.
Sure. Okay. Okay.
The hope that, okay, I'm going to get there. Even the right.
Yeah,
time,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
There,
yeah, yeah.
And so sometimes when I explain it to them, I think because of my own self internally, I don't fully see everything I do as spiritual. So then maybe that's the problem, which is.
That's your Krishna consciousness.
That's my Krishna consciousness, right? As you were saying, it's incremental.
So yeah,
we
yeah.
can see even our
yeah.
little steps. Is,
okay. Okay, we're on the same wavelength now. Right behind you.
The topic of struggle creates envy. Sometimes with a small team of devotees, that we have to do many things.
Sure.
And sometimes I've seen it that devotees will perceive that others may not be doing enough.
Yeah.
And that tends to consume the consciousness.
Yeah.
The thought processes in mind.
I've had conversations with devotees about this.
So, and obviously we know internally that's not a good consciousness.
No.
Because we're not Krishna conscious.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, there might be external veneer of concern about why that devotee is not properly engaged. And so on, to sort of justify in my mind a good reason for being upset about it and so on. So the answer is, you've already told the answer in the class, you have to become more Krishna conscious, but dealing with such situations, devotees have come to me with such situations also. You know, how do you advise such a person to just stay focused on their
It depends
own?
On the person. Depends, as you know. Responses are very customized. I can think of like a whole range of, my mind is flashing under a range of things I might say depending upon the person. Here's one. Just imagine we say to everybody that comes to stay in the temple, here's $1 million. Not cash. Here's $1 million. Use it for Krishna. It's an opportunity. Is everyone going to use $1 million equally well? Some have more qualification to use $1 million. Well, some have less qualification. Some will just spoil the opportunity. Some will go nuts. So the opportunity is there for everyone. So expect that according to qualification, you know, we're on different levels of our spiritual trajectory, and some are going to use the opportunity well. Now, what are we going to do about that? We can criticize them for not being at the same level of our spiritual trajectory, or have other people who are above us look at us saying, you know, what's wrong with this person? Or are we part of a spiritual family that are assisting one another? And we help, like that little thing that that's on my desk about a friend at the bottom, is knowing exactly where somebody's at, you gently continue to help them grow. So some are going to do more of the teamwork, and some are going to be in a little more peripheral, and some are going to be like, you know, when's Prashadam? Sorry, I have to chant my rounds, Prabhu. I mean, there was somebody like that, just a Prabhupada story. Vishal Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple. He lived in Los Angeles for a long time, and, you know, that was his, I have to chant my rounds, Prabhu. And then he went to live in Vrindavan, and it was, I have to chant my rounds, Prabhu. And it was all day long. He would have conversations with people and do whatever he wanted to do, and whenever he was asked to do some service, I have to chant my rounds, Prabhu. So one time Prabhupada was leaving, I was in the group that were leaving, going out the front gate, and Vishal Prabhu was waiting with his bead bag and his, you know, he had a big belly, and he paid obeisances. And Prabhupada just looked at him and said, Vishal, do something practical. And just walked. Why are you standing here? Do something practical. Well, he didn't tell him what. He just, you know, do something practical. So there's all varieties of things. So.
It was another point of clarification. Sometimes as individuals, if we feel that we're doing a lot more than others, I'll just end it. I don't feel that about myself personally. So I'm not speaking about myself here. I have seen this around in our community. I'm definitely not speaking about myself.
Okay.
Everyone feels that I'm doing so much. And then they start to feel overwhelmed by that. So then the combination of seeing others not doing so much and then also feeling overwhelmed starts to weigh heavy on the consciousness. And then how long can a person go on like that? So then...
We can't comparing ourselves to others fundamentally is material. It's not spiritual. It's material. So stop doing the material game and then just look at yourself. Not what other people are doing, not doing, and all the things that have to get done, and look at oneself and, you know, who am I? What's my capacity? What are the things that I need to continue to grow in Krishna consciousness realistically? Certainly received under guidance, evaluate those things and do those things. And then regard others that may be able to do more or others that may be able to do less with some appreciation that here's one that's able to do more, and is there some way that I can be of some assistance, starting with just being a good example for the person that's doing less to do a little more. You know, grow together in Krishna consciousness without ending. Because I'm trying to focus on the message here. So, try to oneself to be an example of a growing in Krishna consciousness person. A sustainable, growing in Krishna consciousness person. And taking on, Prabhupada certainly requested that we take on responsibility to help him make Krishna consciousness happen in the world. And it starts with being Krishna conscious to make it happen in the world, or, you know, in our community here. So that's a big responsibility. And then give it to others. Not just an act, but the Krishna consciousness to others. And that's a labor of love. And as much as the love is there, and the spiritual strength is there, and so forth, then one can do like that. One is empowered.
Thank you.
It's 9:05. I'm going to end. Thank you very much for the Prabhupada Ki Jai.